ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
सो वी आर रीडिंग फॉर कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 47 एंटाइटल्ड द सॉन्ग ऑफ द बी, टेक्स्ट नंबर 12 टुडे।
गोप्युवाच मधुपकितव बंधो मास्पृशाङ्घ्रिं सपत्न्या कुच विलुलित माला कुमकुम स्मश्रुभिर्न वहतु मधुपतिस्तन मानिनी नाम प्रसादम यदु सदसि विडम्ब्यम् यस्य दूतस्त्वमिद्रेक। गोप्यवाच मधुपकितव बंधो मास्पृशाङ्घ्रिं सपत्न्या कुच विलुलित माला कुमकुम स्मश्रुभिर्न वहतु मधुपतिस्तन मानिनी नाम प्रसादम यदु सदसि विडम्ब्यम यस्य दूतस्त्वमिद्रेक। गोप्योवाच मधुपकितव बंधो मास्पृशाङ्घ्रिं सपत्न्या कुच विलुलित माला कुमकुम स्मश्रुभिर्न वहतु मधुपतिस्तन मानिनी नाम प्रसादम यदु सदसि विडम्ब्यम् यस्य दूतस्त्वमिद्रेक। गोप्युवाच मधुपकितव बंधो मास्पृशाङ्घ्रिं सपत्न्या कुच विलुलित माला
माताजीस।
गोप्य उवाच स्पृशाङ्घ्रिं सपत्न्या कुच विलुलित माला कुमकुम स्मश्रुभिर्न वहतु मधुपतिस्तन मानिनी नाम प्रसादम यदु सदसि विडम्ब्यम यस्य दूतस्त्वम।
विल सी द वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। गोपी उवाच द गोपी सेड मधुपा ओ बंबलबी कितव ऑफ ए चीटर बंधो ओ फ्रेंड Maspresha. Please do not touch. Angrim, the feet. Sapatnya, of the lover, who is our rival. Kucha, the chest. Vilulita, fallen from. Mala, from the garland. Kumkuma, with the red cosmetic. Smashrubhi, with the whiskers. Naha, our. Vahatu, let him bring. Madhupati, the lord of the Madhu dynasty. Tat, his. Manini nam, to the women. Prasadam, mercy or kindness. Yadu sadasi, in the royal assembly of the Yadus. Vidambyam, an object of ridicule or contempt. Yasya, whose. Dutaha, messenger. Tvam, you. Idrik, such. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The gopi said, O honeybee, O friend of a cheater, don't touch my feet with your whiskers, which are smeared with the kumkum that rubbed onto Krishna's garland when it was crushed by the chest of a rival lover. Let Krishna satisfy the women of Mathura. One who sends a messenger like you will certainly be ridiculed in the Yadu's assembly. Purport. Srimati Radharani indirectly chastised Krishna by chastising the bumblebee, which she took for his messenger. She addressed the bumblebee as Madhupa, one who drinks the nectar of flowers. And she addressed Krishna as Madhupati, the lord of Madhu. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that this and the following 9 verses exemplify 10 kinds of impulsive speech spoken by a lover. This verse illustrates the qualities of Prajalpa as described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the following verse from his Ujjwala Nilamani 14.182. Asuyershya Madayuja Yova dhirana mudraya priyasya kaushalodgara prajalpa satukirtyate. Prajalpa is speech that denigrates the tactlessness of one's lover with expressions of disrespect. It is spoken in a mood of envy, jealousy and pride. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word kitava bandho expresses envy. The phrase from sapatnya to naha expresses jealousy. The phrase mas prishangrim expresses pride. And the phrase from vahatu to prasadam expresses disrespect. While the phrase from yadu sadasi to the end of the verse decries Krishna's tactless treatment of Srimati Radharani. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam rupah kada mayam dadati sva padantikam. Vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajata sahagana raghunathanvitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीन बंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानंद द्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो राम राम हरे हरे सो विद द ब्लेसिंग्स ऑफ ऑल द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज एंड द सीनियर्स सिंस दिस इज अ सर्विस that we have to speak on this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam and with sufficient warnings from the previous speaker, we are speaking in a very humble mood just so that this is there, part of the Bhagavatam, and we have been given this service to speak. So we have made a small attempt to present a few points in front of all of you. The 10th canto is very special. Within that, Vrindavan is very special. Within that, these verses are the most special. Why? These are not just the words of Krishna. These are not just the words of the Vrajvasis. These are not just the words of the gopis. These are the words of the most special gopi. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, in his autobiography, he calls Vrindavan the forest of grace. We are hearing the words from the mother of all grace. She is the source of that grace which makes Vrindavan the forest of grace. So this is very special, and we should definitely prepare our consciousness before we speak on this. So there is an incident from the life of Srila Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj. One time a learned caste Goswami, he was speaking on this section, the Bhramar Geet, the song of the bumblebee, in Kulia, in Navadvip district, and very popular, many people would go there. And one person, he came to Babaji Maharaj and he said, this speaker who is speaking on the Bhramar Geet is a very excellent speaker. He is almost capturing and mesmerizing the whole audience. Babaji Maharaj immediately told him, tomorrow you should not go to hear this discourse. He said, when the rains come, weeds grow. Yes, the seeds also grow, but when there is a heavy downpour, even the seeds get washed away. So he said, most of the people in this world, because they are full of material desires, when they hear of such pastimes between Radha and Krishna, such feelings expressed, it only incites lust in their heart. And there are some people who have some faith in Radha Krishna pastimes. Their hearts may not be pure, they have some faith, but based on simple faith in Radha Krishna pastimes, they assume that they understand the transcendental nature of these pastimes. So he said, the people who are listening, they are not worthy, and the person who is speaking, he is also not worthy of speaking. Then another person who was seated there said, but Babaji Maharaj, we saw some devotees who were listening to this class, they were weeping. Somebody was saying, oh Krishna, oh Krishna. Another person was saying, oh Radha, oh Radha. So Babaji Maharaj said, you feel this is ecstasy? He said, this is actually madness caused by lust. Then in his words, these are Babaji Maharaj's words, it is not spiritual ecstasy, but rather the madness born of lust. This kind of deviation will cause the ruin of this world. You have come to know of their so-called ecstasy by seeing them weep. He who has no love for himself, how can he get love of God through the display of Maya? If someone has truly achieved love of God, then request him to leave his home and family. He should come to the banks of the Ganges, renounce sense gratification and take shelter of honest, non-duplicitous bhajan. If we observe him performing this austerity for 1 year, then we will know the true extent of his eagerness to hear Bhramar Gita. And we have been given this opportunity, this service of speaking on the first shloka of this Bhramar Gita. So we are very dependent on all of you. Yesterday's one thread was that the fault of modern education. So today's highly educated people, they are academically very advanced, but they are completely emotionless when dealing with people around them, living people around them, and they are completely clueless as to what is the right understanding of spiritual life, who is God. When such people are discussing the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, especially the gopis meeting Krishna, it's very difficult. But these gopis, it's not that they just love Krishna, but they fit into all the definitions of an advanced devotee. In the 3rd canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mother Devahuti, while speaking to her husband, speaks one shloka in which she says, the purpose of all work is that it should lead you to religion. Nehe yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirthapada sevaya jivan api mritohi saha. So she is saying all work is actually meant for advancing in the religion. All religion is meant for advancing in the renunciation. And all renunciation is meant for serving the lotus feet of the Lord. So when gopis work, when gopis practice some religious activities, when gopis renounce their attachment to worldly considerations, it is not just one of those individual items. They have actually reached the summit of this cycle. What is that? Serving the lotus feet of the Lord. And that's why they are very glorious. Currently in this section that we are discussing, gopis are feeling intense longing of separation from Krishna. And it is that longing that is making them speak such incoherent words. This longing, this pain is almost killing them on the bodily level. But is all also, it is pumping unlimited energy into their hearts. As their body is withering away in separation from Krishna, their heart is rising more and more in anticipation of meeting Krishna, because Krishna has said, I will come. In the ocean of selfless love, Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu, these gopis are expert swimmers. With every wave, they rise higher and higher, experiencing Krishna's love. And once in a while, they also dunk in the ocean, just out of anticipation that when we come up, we will be happy. In this ocean, they are not afraid of the deadly, dangerous sharks of Krishna's neglect. They are not afraid of the sucking whirlpools in the ocean of separation. And they are not afraid of destructive typhoons of possible social disrepute. They just want to swim in this ocean, whatever may come. There is a beautiful verse which says, the river of Radharani overcame the mountains of her relatives and overcame the bends of society and finally reached the ocean of Krishna. This shows how overcoming everything, they are just focused on Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.29.47 purport, the translators have quoted Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, who is quoting Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra, in which he mentions, so Natya Shastra is the science of drama, emotions. So there he mentions, Na vina vipralambhena sambhogaha pushtim ashnute. The line means, direct contact is not fully appreciated until separation has been experienced.
In Ujjwala Neelamani, Srila Rupa Goswami defines Vipralamba in the following words. Just as one cannot dye cloth without using dye, one cannot reach the full happiness of love without having been separated from one's beloved. So that's why these gopis, they are in deep ecstasy. This Vipralamba, separation from Krishna, has four parts as mentioned in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is Purva Rag, Mana, Pravasa and Prem Vaichitya. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions Purva Rag, initial attraction, Mana is because of some small mistake, a lover becomes angry, so-called angry. Pravasa is physical separation, are the three prominent characteristics of the gopis. And Prema Vaichitya is the prominent characteristics of the queens of Dwarka. So specifically in today's verse, we are dealing with Pravas, which means, according to NOD, Pravas is a word used to indicate the separation of lovers who were previously intimately associated. This separation is due to their being in different geographical places. So gopis here, they're constantly thinking, where is Krishna, how to serve Krishna, what is the right way to give pleasure to Krishna. Here we see that Srimati Radharani is criticizing Krishna by indirectly criticizing the bumblebee, thinking that this bumblebee is a representative of Krishna's. In the purport, the translators have mentioned, Srimati Radharani is speaking impelled by envy, jealousy, pride, disrespect and criticism. We see in the usual sequence of purification, a person is born with this. Yesterday's speaker mentioned, we are born above the jata, Rishabhdev's words. So, all of us are born with this, jealousy, pride, criticism and so on. And then, the whole purpose of engaging in God's service is to get purified, is to let go of all this. And here we see the highest devotee is speaking, impelled by jealousy, pride, criticism and all that. So we'll take a small understanding of this, that how can this be understood by all of us. We can definitely understand the gopis are quite philosophical. In the verses preceding this, the gopis spoke of examples, how a teacher is abandoned by the students, how a tree is abandoned by the birds, how the king who is incompetent is abandoned by the subjects. It means they are simple village girls, but they understand worldly things also. They are quite intelligent. So, if they can understand how the world goes, can't they understand that our love for Krishna is unwedded love? We do not have a socially acceptable relationship with Krishna. So, if this is unwedded love, there is going to be social pressure on us. The feelings that we have can be expressed private. This is one of the meanings of the word gopi, that they keep it gupta in their heart. They speak about it only in secret places. So we can express it, we can talk about it only in secret places. But it is never going to be possible that we and Krishna come together outwardly. So definitely they understand this. Also, meeting and separation, we can say they are two sides of the same coin. When you meet somebody, one day or the other, separation is implied. A coin has two sides. When the monsoon comes, there is one concept of getting wet and there is another concept of getting dry. Because, yes, there will be another side also. In the other seasons, we never talk of getting dry. In the other seasons, we never say, no, now I'll get dry. Because that's how you are. You're always dry. So it means there are always two sides. So if the gopis can understand so many things about the world, they can definitely understand there is bound to be separation. It means when Srimati Radharani is crying out in pain, it means in the Ramayana, when Lord Ramchandra is crying out in pain to Radharani, it is not some mundane feelings. They very well understand that meeting and separation are indistinguishable from each other. Just the finer aspects vary. It's one and the same. Internally, it is all meeting. It means these words which appear non-meaningful to us, how can she have pride, jealousy, disrespect and criticism at that level? These words are not non-meaningful. This meaning is hidden to us. The words of Radharani, the words of the gopis are at another level. Previously also, the gopis have expressed such seemingly unmeaningful words in their speech. When they saw the flute, Venu, very close to Krishna. Krishna carries the flute with him always. He plays it whenever he wants to. At one point of time, they have sang the Venu Geet. And what is this Venu Geet? Venu Geet is all the gopis come together and they express their jealousy towards the flute. They express things like, oh, this flute, although he is a male, how does he enjoy so much nectar from Krishna's lips? This is ayogya. This is inappropriate. How did he get this fortune? How many mantras he has chanted? What austerities he has done? Which holy places this Venu has visited? So all this seem to be, you know, what are they speaking? They are speaking what austerities the Venu has done. They speak the mother, the river, which nourishes the Venu, the bamboo. Oh, the mother must be singing the glories of her son. The bamboo trees on the banks of Yamuna must be singing the glories of their son. They must be singing, how fortunate is our descendant. He enjoys so much proximity to Krishna. Then another gopi says, oh, he is robbing us of the fortune that actually belongs to us. Maybe we should kill him. Maybe we should dispose him off. Then another gopi, she says, actually, you know, this Venu, he deserves clemency from us. Actually, this Venu deserves some mercy from us. You know why? Because he does one good thing. Yes, he steals the nectar from Krishna's lips that actually belongs to us. But this Venu indirectly notifies us when Krishna comes from the forest. Because Krishna comes playing the flute. So in one sense, he tells us, he informs us that Krishna is now coming. So on that count, we can forgive the Venu. This kind of talks they have already done. So the thing that we wanted to focus on is, even as they are speaking such things about the Venu, you know, envy and jealousy against the Venu and all that, the most sweetest thing is, they never ever go to Krishna and they never ever express, what is this flute doing with you? Sometimes there are some pastimes mentioned in the Goswami books where while playing, you know, they just took the flute and hid it somewhere. But they never destroyed the Venu. They never broke the Venu. One time there was a dice game between Radharani and Krishna was not able to look on the side, and Lalita, you know, stole the flute, the Venu. But she returned it also later. It means they might express their envy and they might express their jealousy, but it is just in words. Finally, they are devotees of Krishna. And they are not just devotees of Krishna, they are the purest devotees of Krishna. It means, you know, it is just natural for a lover to feel all this. But it never transforms into action. The envy in their speech actually has no physical existence. They never destroy the flute, they never go and complain to Krishna. Their only mood is, what gives pleasure to Krishna? Does the flute give pleasure to Krishna? Of course. It is his constant companion. One of the four special qualities of Krishna above Lord Narayan is related to the flute. So, they speak all these things, but their heart is, what pleases Krishna? It breaks our heart, but still it pleases us. That is the special quality of the gopis. We spoke about the forest of grace. This is what it takes to enter the forest of grace. Whatever I wish on the side, whatever Krishna wishes, let me do it. So because the gopis and specifically Radharani have undergone this purification, this selflessness, even though it breaks my heart, if it pleases Krishna, let me do it. They have become the distributors of grace. His divine grace is available, but for becoming His divine grace, He had to cry alone in the wilderness. So all of us, whoever get a desire to become distributors of grace, to become agents of grace, we should understand it's hard work. It's very difficult. So this is one thing for us to learn. We were looking on this Madhupa, the bumblebee. So there are two kinds of bees who interact with flowers. One is the bumblebee and one is the honeybee. The bumblebee is called Madhupa and the honeybee is called Makshika. So the difference is, the bumblebee, it goes from flower to flower and collects nectar and it enjoys the nectar. Whereas the honeybee, it goes from flower to flower, it collects nectar, it transforms it into honey and stores it in the beehive. So from the context of today's discussion, we can say that, you know, the honeybee is some kind of a responsible insect, that it cares for the future and, you know, it stores it. Whereas this bumblebee is more like an unconcerned insect. It does not have a storing mentality. There is no question of chastity for the bumblebee. Only this flower or like that. He is enjoying flower to flower. He is always in an enjoyment mood. And that's why Radharani, when she sees this bumblebee, she is immediately reminded of Krishna. There are some similarities between the Madhupa, the bumblebee, and Krishna. First is, both have a blackish, bluish complexion. The second is, the Madhupa, the bumblebee, has golden stripes on his lower part of the body. So similarly, Krishna, he has golden clothes on the lower part of his body. Then the Madhupa, because it is constantly visiting flowers, its blackish body is decorated by pollen, which is usually golden or some other color. Similarly, the dark body of Krishna is always decorated with golden ornaments. The fourth thing is that, just like the bumblebee goes from flower to flower, similarly Krishna enjoys the association of different gopis at different times. And the third thing is, the fifth thing is, just like the bumblebee always makes some sound, like that, Krishna always plays very enchantingly and makes a very bewitching sound on his flute. So there is ample reasons why this bumblebee reminds Radharani of Krishna, and she thinks that, oh, this bumblebee is Krishna's representative. Indirectly also, in the today's shloka, she is mentioning, just like this bumblebee cannot be trusted, similarly, Uddhav, who has come on behalf of Krishna, also cannot be trusted. We should not take his word seriously. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the just before the pastime of Prithu Maharaj, his father Vena, his life is described. So it is described how he became so proud of his power that he instructs the Brahmanas who are engaged in religious activities. He says, all of you, actually you should worship me as the supreme person. There is a shloka in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam where Krishna says to Uddhava, Sarva Deva Mayo Guru. Krishna says that all the demigods are in the body of the spiritual master. So here, Vena, he says, Sarva Deva Mayo Nripaha. He says, all the demigods are in the body of the Nripa, the king. So he says, Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, Varuna, they are in my body. So actually, instead of worshipping the Supreme Lord, instead of worshipping the demigods, you should worship me. I am the supreme enjoyer of all the sacrifices. And as soon as he says this, the Brahmanas, they become very angry with him. He says, how dare somebody can speak such blasphemous words against the Supreme Lord? And then they decide to kill him. But very interesting thing is, they say, they express, since this Vena has done such contempt of the Supreme Lord, he's already killed. The word that they used is Achyuta Nindaya. To jo Achyut ki ninda karega, wo apne hi mein hi mar jayega. He's already dead. So it is mentioned, they just make a sound. Humkritaha. This is the word in that shloka. They just make a sound, hum. They don't even have to utter a Brahma shap. They don't even have to speak some mantras or some powerful words to kill him. Just because he has done Achyuta Ninda, he's already dead. Just like, hum, and then he's dead, and then Prithu Maharaj is born. So these are the effects of blaspheming the Supreme Lord. And in today's shloka we are seeing, Srimati Radharani is kind of blaspheming. Saying, oh, you know, this person, he is not to be believed. There is no, you cannot trust him and like that. So we have to understand it properly. Yes, when you disrespect somebody, there are cruel words hurled at him. But in love also, derision has a place. Sometimes, in order to evoke love from the heart of a person, in order to generate deeper feelings of attraction in a lover, sometimes hard words are hurled at the lover. Just like sometimes, you know, when you want water from the deep ground, you have to dig the ground. So digging the ground is hurting the ground. But then what happens? Water comes, and then this water nourishes the ground. It makes it better. Similarly, sometimes lovers are engaged in harsh talks, which to a third person will feel, what are they doing? Are they lovers or are they haters? They are hating each other. Sometimes we see in this world, they may not be lovers, just two males, and you know, they are brothers or they are good friends with each other. And sometimes they are arguing and they are shouting and they are abusing each other almost. And then a third person will feel, "Arey, theek hai, jhagda mat karo. Don't fight." And they say, "What happened to you? We are not fighting. This is just something that we wanted to exchange with each other. This is kind of our love for each other." So here, in a relationship, sometimes rivalry, sometimes you know, violence of words can tactfully, when it is done tactfully, it can actually generate love. For a person loving somebody, what is the worst treatment? For a person loving somebody, if the person, one of them, uselessly, unnecessarily flatters the other person. So flattery is different from glorification. He's flattering, false flattery. You know, it hurts actually. What is he saying? He wants something from me. Kuch toh, you know, he wants something. So that hurts. Sometimes you criticize the other person and that also hurts. But flattery and ridicule, sometimes it can be tolerated. But you know what is the worst thing? The worst thing is when one lover neglects the other lover. That's very painful. Say, at least acknowledge my presence, at least speak to me harsh words, at least speak to me some sweet words, whatever it is. But there is one thing beyond neglect that hurts a genuine lover. That thing is when you see your lover with a rival. So if a female loves a male, flattery will hurt her, neglect will hurt her, criticism will hurt her, but that all can be tolerated. She will feel that with time, this person will understand. But when this female will see the male with another female, that's the end. That's really very strong. So here, we are seeing that the gopis of Vrindavan, they have heard. The news has reached from Mathura. Krishna went to Mathura and Krishna has killed Kamsa. Now for the rest of the world, this is the most important event in their lives from the perspective of remembering Krishna. What did Krishna do? You know what Krishna did? The greatest tyrant, the person who was abusing everyone, who was even oppressing demons, who was even oppressing kings of other countries, this tyrant who nobody could kill, who had the strength of 10,000 elephants, who was almost undefeatable, this person was killed by Krishna. So for the rest of the world, this is the most important event. Small boy Krishna, 11 years old, has killed mighty Kamsa. Now as far as we have read till now, and if this is a mistake, some of you can correct us, we never ever heard that the gopis even once glorify Krishna for this task. Hey, you know what? Oh Gopi, our Krishna who used to play with us and sometimes he would be defeated by Sridhama in a wrestling match, he went and killed Kamsa. How great is our Krishna? They never speak. This is this wonderful sweetness of the gopis. But one thing about Mathura that they can relate to. So killing of Kamsa is a world changing event. We have heard in the beginning of the 10th canto, what were the atrocities done by Kamsa? But only for one particular group of human beings, personalities, not human beings, on this planet, this Kamsa killing incident is not at all important. From their perspective, the most important thing that is happening in Mathura is that there are beautiful girls in Mathura. Krishna is already beautiful. He must be meeting them. So, apart from all the things that Krishna has done, he has killed Kuvalaya Peed, the mighty elephant. He has killed Chanur, he has killed Mushtik. None of that, it matters to them. All they can think is, Krishna must be enjoying with the beautiful city girls. Because this is the nature of true love. Everything else can be tolerated, but rivalry, it cannot be tolerated. So this is the special feeling of possessiveness for Krishna. Krishna is mine. Krishna is ours. How can he enjoy with rival girls? He can do whatever he wants. That's all right. But he cannot enjoy with others. Srila Prabhupada summarizes this feeling of possessiveness in simple words. He says, I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. out of this, I am Krishna's comes first and then comes Krishna is mine. In Prabhupada's own life, there is one incident where he became extremely possessive. Now, somebody who is a Paramahansa, Parivrajakacharya, became very possessive about jewel land. It is mentioned in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrit that some of his own disciples who were witnessing this whole thing, who were residents of the Juhu property, they felt, you know, why is Prabhupada so much possessive about this land? Is there a shortage of land in the city called Bombay? Why can't we just shift to another place and we'll build a grand temple for Radha Ras Bihari there? But why was Prabhupada possessive about this land? It was not that land. Prabhupada had made a personal promise to Radha Ras Bihari, stay here, I will build you a temple. So Prabhupada's possessiveness for the land was not possessiveness for the land. Prabhupada's possessiveness for the land was actually possessiveness on behalf of Krishna. That land was already pledged to Krishna. How can anybody else take away the property of Krishna? So Prabhupada was fighting for that land tooth and nail. Not for himself. He was fighting on behalf of Krishna. In those days, that land had no value. Today Juhu is very costly. Those days it was Juhu village. It wasn't a very costly property that for financial reasons Prabhupada is fighting for it. So, this possessiveness is expressed by devotees. We are possessive about objects, concepts of this world. We are concerned with our own well-being. We are concerned with our own prosperity when we are possessive about certain things. You know, Krishna, he says in the Gita, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. He says, under my supervision, the material nature operates. So don't we have faith? Yes, we do not have faith. Although we may claim that we have faith in Krishna's words, actually we do not have faith in Krishna's words. Otherwise, when we say, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti, so if we serve Krishna, and for that we become possessive about Krishna, will not Krishna arrange material situations and material environments and material facilities for us? So this fact is understood by the devotees. This fact is understood by the gopis. And that's why they are not possessive about any other thing except Krishna and his service. Possessive nature for mundane objects gives us a chance to advance spiritually. And possessive nature, when it is applied to different things, actually becomes a curse on us. The living entity is actually eternal. And because it is eternal, desire, which is a part of the living entity, is also eternal. Desire is the concomitant factor of the living entity. So desires are always going to be there for you and me. But we have a choice where we apply those desires. Gopis have perfected the art that we will apply our desires to Krishna and his service. So the gopis are thinking, how can my Krishna be with other women? The gopis, one will say, oh, you know, they are simple village girls. Probably they don't know Krishna's Aishwarya. But in shlokas where the gopis are speaking, they speak about how in the previous incarnation, Krishna as a Lord Ramchandra killed Vali. It means the gopis know this is the Supreme Lord. In the Gopi Gita, they call Krishna as Antaratma. They know Krishna is Paramatma. Sometimes they call, oh, because you are in Vrindavan, the goddess of fortune Indira has now come and is now trying to become a resident of Vrindavan. They know Krishna is the Supreme Lord. They know Krishna is Vishnu. They know Krishna is the Ram reincarnated again. So they know who is Krishna, but their simplicity and their possessive affection, sweet affection for Krishna, overpowers, covers all conception of awe, and they can only have the feeling of sweetness and possessiveness for Krishna. Amongst all the gopis in Vrindavan, there are two groups. One is the leftist group, which is called the Vama gopis, and there is a rightist group, which is called the Dakshina gopis. It is said that the Dakshina gopis, they are very submissive, and they are in that mood, I am Krishna's. But the Vama gopis, the leftist gopis, they are unsubmissive, and they are always in the mood that Krishna is mine. So Chandravali is the leader of the rightist gopis, and Radharani and all these gopis, they belong to the leftist group. It means this possessiveness for Krishna, that my Krishna, how can he be with any other woman? This is of a pure kind. This is very extraordinary. This is at another level. another point that we want to speak on is how the gopis' deep meditation on Krishna does not insulate them from the rest of the world, but it makes them more and more concerned for the world. So in the beginning of this chapter, it was mentioned how actually Uddhav had gone to meet Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. And in the morning, all the gopis came to meet Nanda Baba and Yashoda Mai, and that's where they saw Uddhav, and then they took him to Uddhav Kyari, and there they are speaking this Bhramar Gita. The gopis are speaking the Bhramar Gita. So now the question comes that the gopis are experiencing such extraordinary possessiveness. They are in separation. They are in that ocean of separation. They're burning with pain. Within all that, the interesting thing is that the gopis have deep concern for Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, why did gopis do this? So every morning, all the gopis would come and meet Krishna's father and Krishna's mother because they knew the pain of Krishna's father and Krishna's mother. If they are experiencing the pain of Krishna's separation, they also knew father and mother how much they must be experiencing. They would come to offer solace to Nanda Baba and Yashoda Mai when they themselves are drowning in that pain. It's not that they are very happy and they are satisfied and they are offering something. They themselves are crying. But when they see Nanda and Yashoda's streams of tears, they wipe off their own tears. And they go and present themselves in front of Yashoda and Nanda just out of concern for them. It means the more you become absorbed in Krishna, the more you become also concerned about the rest of the world. It's not that when you become more and more deeply in love with Krishna, now it's only between me and Krishna. Now the rest of the world does not matter to me. No, in fact it is the reverse. The more you become fixed up, the more you go deeper into your relationship with Krishna, you also develop more and more concern for the rest of the world. Daya is included within bhakti. So, we remember one quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are two kinds of sadhus. Those who prefer personal bhajan, and they are called bhajananandis. And there are some sadhus who prefer public preaching. They are called the Goshtyanandis. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in one line, he mentions, the bhajananandi, when he becomes a preacher, he is the best Goshtyanandi. So here we see the most intense bhajananandis, the gopis always meditating on Krishna, deeply meditating on Krishna, but their concern becomes more and more. And because Uddhav had a brief interaction with the gopis, it wasn't a long interaction, but because the best Goshtyanandi is actually the bhajananandi, because he associated for some time with the bhajananandis, later we see an event that is described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, that towards his old age, even after Krishna's physical disappearance from this planet, in one situation, Vidur, he meets Uddhav and he asks Uddhav questions related to Krishna. What happens to Uddhav? In this situation, Krishna is there on the planet, he is visible, he's just gone to Mathura, which is 12 kilometers away. And Krishna has promised, I will come back. So the gopis, in one sense, have a hope that Krishna will come back and we will see Krishna, we will meet Krishna. In that situation, Krishna has already disappeared. Uddhav knows he has disappeared. And Uddhav, when he is asked by Vidur about Krishna, there is no chance that he will ever meet Krishna. But what does Uddhav do? Uddhav goes into a trance for one muhurta. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti translates it as 48 minutes. For 48 minutes, because Vidur spoke, asked him, please tell me about Krishna, Uddhav just closes his eyes and goes into a trance out of external consciousness. Why does he do that? He has learned his lessons from this small interaction with the gopis sufficiently. He knows how to unite with Krishna. How to unite with Krishna? Not by meeting Krishna. How to unite with Krishna? By thinking of him, by making plans for serving him. So just like the gopis here, in Vipralamba, they are in greater Sambhoga. Similarly, at that time, Uddhav does not start thinking, oh, now when will I die and when will I go back to the spiritual world and when will I meet Krishna? He closes his eyes, goes into deep remembrance, goes into deep meditation for 48 minutes. It is described his whole body erupts in 8 transcendental symptoms of Sattvika Bhava. And in that deep feelings, he unites with Krishna, he meets Krishna. Yunjanaiva sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmasha sukhe sukhe atyantam sukhamashnute brahma samsparsham atyantam sukhamashnute. So 6.28 describes how a yogi enjoys brahma samsparsham. He touches Krishna, and by touching Krishna, brahma samsparsham atyantam sukhamashnute, he enjoys great bliss. But if you read the word-to-word translation, Prabhupada translates brahma samsparsham. Sparsha is touching. Samsparsha is complete touching. So one will feel, you know, the yogis touch the Paramatma in their heart or something. But Prabhupada translates brahma samsparsham as engaged in the service of Krishna. There is only a 3-line purport to that shloka. And Prabhupada translates, the last line of that purport is, brahma samsparsham means to be engaged in the service of Krishna or to make plans about the service of Krishna. And that's why the gopis, even in separation, they are atyantam sukham ashnute. They are completely happy. Why? Because they are always in brahma samsparsha. They are always thinking about Krishna. In vipralamba, they enjoy union. So these are few points that we wanted to present in connection with today's shloka. If there is any maryada vyatikram, please forgive us. This was done only in the mood of service. And thank you very much for all your patience while listening to this class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai.